Welcome to exclusive coverage of the National Turf Writers and Broadcasters Awards Dinner on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Cal Density. Veterinarians can prove it. Horsemen can see it. Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the National Turf Writers and Broadcasters Awards Dinner, the 56th annual awards dinner, live from the Marriott Griffin Gate in Lexington, Kentucky, as we edge closer to the 32nd Breeders' Cup World Championships, which will be held just across town at Keeneland Racecourse for the very first time. And, Jude, that means that this is the first time that the Turf Writers' Dinner has ever been conducted here in Lexington. And, boy, what a night it's going to be.
Yeah, it's very exciting. I was thinking about that driving down here. We never have a chance to be in the home crowd, but we've got it now.
Well, Mike Penna, Jude Feld with you here in Lexington, and Tom Padula is the president of the National Turf Writers Association. He is the man who has put this program together. This is a program where we honor Team American Pharoah as the first Triple Crown winner the sport has seen since affirmed in 1978. We honor Tom Hammond of NBC. We honor Tim Layden of Sports Illustrated, Kathy Schenck of the Keeneland Library, and distinguished turf writer Bill Mooney. Of course, Tom Leach will have the honors of being the MC here tonight. And Tom Padula with us now. Tom, boy, what an evening.
Well, I mean, we're as excited as could be, and we really appreciate your willingness to broadcast the dinner. It's just great to have you.
Yeah, well, happy to be here, and we are looking forward to visiting with Bill Mooney coming up later. Tom Hammond, Donna Brothers will be with us from NBC as well as we make our way through this pre-show. The awards portion of the evening will start at 8 o'clock Eastern time, and that is when you will hit the stage and kind of get things rolling.
Yeah, that's correct. And, I mean, we could not be more excited about the lineup. I mean, everybody knows what a season it's been, a season that we'll all remember the rest of our lives. To see American Pharoah perform the way he did, I'll never forget those races. And I have to say the connections have been special. And that's a big part of what we're celebrating tonight, the horse and those connections. The Zayats cannot say enough about that family. They showed themselves to be true sportsmen, and we don't have a lot of true sportsmen anymore, in my opinion. So these are special people, and we feel we're giving them a very special award, the Mr. Fitz Award. It's named after Sonny Jim Fitzsimmons, and it's for typifying the spirit of racing. They fit it perfectly, as does Victor Espinoza and, of course, the trainer Bob Baffert, who's done a magnificent training job.
Yeah, Bob's had so many chances at the Triple Crown and finally got it done. A huge relief to him, a tremendous sense of pride, and he's over the moon with this horse.
Absolutely, as he should be, and I really feel he's made every right move. He seems to have an innate sense for this horse, what this horse needs, when he needs it. It's a beautiful thing to watch this play out over the course of a year.
Yeah, it certainly is. And, of course, he is not the only awards recipient. Why don't you spend a little time, Tom, talking about what the National Turf Writers and Broadcasters organization is all about?
Well, we are one of the groups that votes for the Eclipse Awards. But, frankly, we want to be known for much more than that. In recent years, we've really tried to take various initiatives to put ourselves out in the community more, to do more for the racing community. There will be donations made tonight. I believe it will be before perhaps you come on with the live program. But we're going to be making significant donations to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund, to Old Friends. We have with us tonight a student from the University of Kentucky. She is our first recipient of a $2,000 internship. And we are putting her to work tonight for that money. But she has had the pleasure of accompanying a number of our members this fall to see how we do our jobs. And then they put her to work for them. And so it's just been a terrific thing. And this is the first time we've done that program. And we definitely hope to expand on that. We send a speaker out to the University of Arizona to the Racetrack Industry Program. That is something new. We'll be doing that for the second year. I'm happy to say Todd Pletcher, a graduate of that program, thought so highly of what we're doing that he's helping to fund that this year. And we really appreciate Todd for that. And, you know, we just want to be about giving back, doing our part within this industry. that is typically very good to us. I've worked in many, many sports. I've covered the Yankees for 11 years. I've done a ton of pro football. This sport, by comparison, is a joy to work in. And in terms of the level of cooperation that you get.
Well, there's no people like racing people. It's almost like a family in many instances. So I think we can relate to that as well.
All right, visiting with Tom Padula, the president of the National Turf Writers and Broadcasters. Tom, one other question before we let you go. I had referenced that this is the first time this event has come to Lexington, much like the Breeders' Cup. How significant is that to the organization?
Well, I mean, I guess it's significant to us. It's significant to the industry. I actually just did a piece for the New York Times about Keeneland hosting its first Breeders' Cup and what it might mean down the road. I think it gives hope to certain venues that maybe before didn't think they were in the mix. And talking to Craig Fravel, he made the point, in our early years, we wanted to be able to announce those big attendance numbers. That's not so much the priority now. It's on the quality of the experience. I have no doubt that we are about to experience a wonderful Breeders' Cup, thanks to the good people at Keeneland.
I think he speaks for everybody, doesn't he?
Well, anyway, I'm not going to go there.
Tom, we appreciate it, my friend, and all the best. Congratulations on an amazing evening here tonight. Thank you for having us, and we look forward to visiting with so many of the awards recipients in this first half of the program and hearing from them on the podium in the second half.
Terrific. Thank you again.
All right, Tom Padula here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. We'll get to a break. We'll come back, and we're going to hear from Bill Mooney, who is the first recipient of the Bill Mooney Award of Courage. Boy, you're going to want to stay tuned for that. He's a tremendous turf writer, and this is a tremendous honor. You're listening to exclusive coverage of the National Turf Writers and Broadcasters Awards on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Cal Density. Veterinarians can prove it. Horsemen can see it.
Celebrating 10 years of Eclipse award-winning coverage. Thank you for making HRRN your home for a decade of memories.
Cal Density announces a revolutionary gastrointestinal guard and aid for all classes and all ages of horses. A natural registered animal feed product, it comes as a single dose disposable syringe or a handy top dress squeeze pouch. Field trials on Cal Density Digestive Aid have returned 100% favorable results as observed by their trainers and owners, and the cost is half of what horsemen are accustomed to paying. Cal Density Digestive Aid will be available in mid-November, or you can order online at caldensity.com.
Since 2006, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund has provided critical financial assistance to some 60 riders who have sustained catastrophic on-track injuries. The lives of these former athletes who have given so much to the sport of horse racing have been changed forever. I'm Mike Penna, president of the Horse Racing Radio Network and proud supporter of the PDJF, and I ask you to join me in supporting this outstanding organization right now by texting the word jockey to 50555. You'll be credited with a $10 donation that can literally change the lives of those disabled riders who need it so much. It's quick, it's easy, and it's only $10. Who would think a simple $5 Exacta box would mean so much to so many? So let's all help make a huge difference in the lives of those riders who have given us so many great memories. Text the word jockey to 50555 today and visit pdjf.org to learn more. Message and data rates may apply. Terms mgive.org/chi.
It's time for the Breeders' Cup World Championships with top horses, great races, and lucrative wagering opportunities. Looking to make a score at Keeneland on racing's biggest days? HopeJude.com's popular analysis sheets are packed with insightful handicapping, private clocker updates, and inside information only the pontiff is privy to. Arm yourself for an educated and inspired assault on the mutual windows at HopeJude.com and make it a Breeders' Cup to remember.
Want to know what we're up to?
Yeah.
Then log on to horseracingradio.net.
It appears that the website has become alive.
Horseracingradio.net is your official home for HRRN on the web. Read our blogs, download our podcasts, link up to our Twitter and Facebook pages, listen to live streaming of all of our broadcasts, and much more. HRRN is your home for racing's biggest events, and our home on the web is horseracingradio.net. That's horseracingradio.net.
Hi, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, inviting you to join me for Express Bet Radio on HRRN. Tune in for live racing action from around the country every Wednesday through Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern. It's the place to be on your drive home, through the final furlong of your workday, and for all fans of the sport of kings. It's Express Bet Radio on HRRN, on Sirius 220, XM 206, and streaming worldwide at horseracingradio.net.
Hello, this is Bill Mott. You're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
Griffin Gate, Lexington, Kentucky, the 56th annual National Turf Writers and Broadcasters Awards Dinner, and what a special night it is going to be here in Lexington as we honor Team American Pharoah, of course the team that brought us the first Triple Crown winner in 37 years. We honor NBC broadcaster Tom Hammond. We honor Tim Layden from Sports Illustrated, Kathy Schneck of the Keeneland Library, and of course distinguished turf writer Bill Mooney, who joins us now. And JT, this is going to be a very special interview. Bill has been a friend of ours for a long time and really looking forward to talking with him.
Yeah, it's great to have him here, and this is a very special award.
Yeah, Bill, this is the first of its kind, and it is to honor you, and we'll give it the exact title. It is the Bill Mooney Award for displaying courage in the face of tremendous adversity, and that is certainly something you've been able to do.
Well, I appreciate you saying that very much. You know, I don't see myself as a particularly courageous person. I'm just a guy who's got cancer and is doing his best to fight it off.
Well, and you have been courageous through this. You wrote a letter to the Turf Writers Association some time ago, and I had a chance to read through that letter. It was very emotional, but it was very heartfelt on your part. Why the need to write the letter?
I wanted to let my fellow turf writers know what was going on with me. You know, this is a rumor-laden industry, and just let them know. I wrote that letter, I believe it was the day after Thanksgiving, and it was only 5 days after I got out of the hospital when I had my first surgery. And it was just one of those, I don't know, sometimes you don't even know why you really write something like that. You just do it. You feel compelled to do it. And it got a tremendous response. It went even a little bit viral on the internet. So I've gotten a lot of support, and I'm very thankful for that.
I think the hallmark of your career has been your truthfulness. You know, you don't mince words often. You speak your mind. And I think everybody, although most of us were tremendously sad to hear the news, we were not surprised that you would inform everybody and indicate your fight and your courage.
Well, you know, it's not as sad as you might think it is. I mean, it's certainly a shock when you first realize. I mean, for me, the timeline was I was diagnosed with cancer on October 29th. On November 4th, they told me they had metastasized into a number of areas. And on November 11th, I was told it was stage 4. And if I didn't have surgery immediately, I had 6 months to live. And then after I had surgery, they told me I still only had 6 months to live. And that was 11 months ago.
Wow. Wow, amazing. And continuing to go strong. And you look great, by the way, Bill.
Thank you. You know, lots of vegetables, lots of exercise, lots of fruit. And I do what my doctors tell me to do.
Smart patient.
Yeah, really.
They love you.
Not too many people can say that. But, you know, I feel very blessed myself, because I was hoping that I would be able to share this Breeders' Cup with you, and then I found out you were going to be honored, and I was very excited about the whole thing.
Having an award named for me and then being the first recipient is, I mean, it's something that's really beyond comprehension, but I've got tremendous amount of support from the turf writers and other people, too. And, you know, overall, and this is one of the things I'm going to say tonight, believe it or not, it's been a good experience. It has made me a better person. It has made me much more aware of the trials and tribulations that other people go through. And you can take just about anything and turn it into a positive experience if you want to, and that's one of my goals.
One of the things you mentioned in that letter to the Turf Writers Association was that you wanted to enrich the lives of others. Mm-hmm. How have you been able to do that?
a kind word carries a lot of weight, I have discovered. You give encouragement to young turf riders. You give encouragement to the older turf riders, too, because we all could use a boost on occasion. You know, writing about the turf, broadcasting the turf, they're difficult chores to do. We do it because we love it. There's not much money in this, as you well know.
Yeah.
But in other ways, too, you know, picking up a check here and there and, you know, sending somebody a card of congratulations, a lot of that gets carried a long way. And one of the things I want to do, too, is set an example. I mean, I'm in a fight, but the cancer's in a fight, too.
How do you feel about turf riding and the wane of turf riders? It's kind of going by the wayside, and I think that's very sad.
It's not what it once was. I remember Randy Funkhauser, who's involved with Charlestown Racetracks, graduate at Stanford University. He's got a degree in English, and he once said to me that the best riding in all sports is turf riding. And he may have a point. I mean, there's still a lot of good turf riding. What we just don't have is the vehicles that we once did in terms of magazines and newspapers. But there's a lot of very good stuff on the Internet. And I'll tell you something. The young turf riders, they're very devoted. They love the sport. They put in a lot of work. In that sense, at least, you know, we're leaving the craft in good hands.
And we are talking with one of the best turf riders of all time, and that's Bill Mooney. He is a Walter Haight Award recipient, meaning that he has been honored for his career in turf riding excellence. Tim Layden will be our guest tonight as he is honored for that particular award, and of course, Tim with Sports Illustrated. And Bill, when you look back on that night that you received the Walter Haight Award, I know that that was a special night for you as well.
That was a special night as well. I mean, getting the Walter Haight Award is something you get from your peers, the National Turf Writers and Broadcasters Association, and when they think enough of you to give you that, I mean, that means an awful lot. I'm not sure I measure up at all with some of the other turf writers received it, you know, people like Joe Hirsch and Red Smith, but it certainly has a proud place on the old friend's mantle place, at Michael Bowen's place, because when I got that, Karen's got the Walter Haight Award, and that's got a proud place on the mantle place in her house. So I feel good about that. Whenever I go there, there it is.
You know, you say that you're not in the same league, and a lot of people would say that very same thing, especially when you start bringing up names like Joe Hirsch. But you look at your two Eclipse Awards, my friend. You got a little resume behind you.
Oh, I've done okay. I mean, I don't believe in false modesty. I think I've had a pretty good career, and I'm satisfied with it. One of the things I always take a certain amount of pride in is for most of the articles I've written over the years, I've also taken my own photographs, so I feel good about that. But, you know, I don't consider myself a top echelon turf writer. Maybe other people look at me that way, but I don't. But I've tried hard, and I've worked hard, and I've got a lot of cooperation and made a lot of friends, and I've had a good run.
Who's your best? Who do you put on top?
Joe Palmer, who wrote for the Blood Horse and then the New York Tribune for so many years. I definitely would put him on top. And our current day turf writers, I certainly think of somebody like Bill Knack. I mean, Knack can make, as Red Smith used to say, a sentence sing. We get Jay Hovday of the Racing Form. He's a fine turf writer. There's no getting around that. And Joe Hirsch, he was a wonderful writer, not the best of journalists. And a lot of people wouldn't like me saying that. I mean, you can't really rely on his material very much for historical accuracy, but he could put words together in a graceful way that very few people could.
What's the biggest difference between being a writer and a journalist?
Oh, my. A writer is very, very much a stylist, and a journalist, I would say that for a journalist, our first and foremost responsibility is to be accurate. Okay, we've got to be accurate. Accuracy, accuracy, accuracy. People will reveal on us for that. And if you can put some style into it at the same time, you're really doing well. And not very many people can combine both, but there are people who do very definitely. I'd say Jay Hovday is an example of that.
Take us through a couple of the moments in the career of Bill Mooney that you're just never going to forget.
I think the most unforgettable day I ever had at the racetrack was the day Longacres closed up in Seattle, Washington, and they set a record that day for their parimutuel handle. And the people who raced at Longacres, they really had the rug pulled out from under them. I mean, that track was sold for greed. It was a very successful racetrack, and the dignity with which they conducted their final day of racing was something I'll never forget. I think the most profound personal experience I ever had is, I don't know if you guys know this, I came from a circus family. My folks were the Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Circus.
Really?
And I went to interview a trainer named Boo Gentry, who had won a Kentucky Derby back in the 1960s. I went to interview him down at a training place in South Florida, and we hit it off, so he invited me over for dinner. And his wife had also been with the Ringling Brothers Circus, and she brought out a scrapbook and cracked it open and showed me a photograph of her standing with my parents on the beach in Sarasota, Florida, which was the winter headquarters of the Ringling Brothers Circus back in 1937 when my parents were first courting.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah, it is. What a great story.
That's cool.
What a great story. Bill Mooney here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. We are live from the National Turf Writers and Broadcasters Awards Dinner. Of course, the awards coming up later this evening. Bill Mooney going to be honored with the inaugural Bill Mooney Award for displaying courage in the face of tremendous adversity. Bill, this is also a night when we honor Team American Pharoah, the first Triple Crown winner since affirmed in 1978. What did American Pharoah's run through the Triple Crown mean to the sport of thoroughbred racing this year?
Well, he's really an exceptional racehorse. There's no getting around that. And, of course, he wins the British Cup Classic on Saturday. He will complete what people are always referring to as the Grand Slam. And we all know about the 37-year wait. But I think Bob Baffert handled himself very well throughout the whole situation. I think the Zayats handled themselves very well throughout the whole situation. And there was just an interest in this horse that I have not seen since Secretariat. Even when you had Triple Crown winners like Seattle Slew and Affirmed, who were public favorites, and of course since then we've had horses like John Henry and Cigar and Zenyatta, but I haven't seen a reaction to a horse as the way that it has been to American Pharoah, I would say in a good, well, since Secretariat, that's over 40 years ago.
Yeah, I think that's interesting that you say that, because Bob Baffert's been very emotional about American Pharoah, and we were out at Spendthrift Farm last week and interviewed Wayne Hughes and Richard Mandela, and Wayne Hughes is very emotional about Beholder. Yeah. And these are two guys, Bob Baffert and Wayne Hughes, that are not usually emotional guys. They're always fun-loving and laughing and joking, but they get choked up when they talk about these horses, and I think that's a very unique situation that we have coming on Saturday when these horses not only have captured the hearts and minds of the fans, but their owners can't seem to live without them.
That is true, and I think, you know, just the whole sport of racing has been caught up in the emotion, as has the loyal following of fans that we have. At the same time, you know, I would say this about the Breeders' Cup Classic. I don't see it boiling down to simply, you know, the American Pharoah and Beholder. I mean, there are some other good horses in there. I mean, I'm in a very small minority when I say this, but I think Frost could run a very big race on Saturday. I think he's prepped for it.
What does the Breeders' Cup coming to Keeneland mean to this area and to the sport of thoroughbred racing?
You want an honest answer to that?
I do.
I don't think Keeneland is a good place for it. I think it's too small. I mean, Keeneland is a beautiful track. It has the boutique meets. The prices that they're charging for the Breeders' Cup are exorbitant. I mean, ridiculously so, and I don't think that's what John Gaines had in mind when he came up with the founding idea for the Breeders' Cup. I hope it works well. I think the traffic could be absolutely enormous. It's tough. If you don't have a Breeders' Cup ticket, it's going to be tough putting a bet down in this town if you don't have some kind of wagering account. My feeling is Keeneland's a beautiful place. There's no question about that. And Churchill Downs is an architectural monstrosity, but if you're going to have an event the size and scope of the Breeders' Cup, it should be a Churchill, not a Keeneland.
Bill Mooney here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Bill, really do appreciate the visit here tonight, and please know you're in our thoughts, you're in our prayers, and we will we'll keep cheering for you, my friend, and keep it rolling.
Thank you very much, and save your concerns for the suffering of others. I'm doing fine.
Well done. Bill Mooney here on HRRN, and boy, what an enjoyable visit, huh?
Yeah, it's great. It's great to have his comments, and not too many people would be brave enough to say they should have had the Breeders' Cup at Churchill.
Well, he may prove to be right. We're going to find out this weekend here. And, of course, you're going to hear all that coverage with us on the Horse Racing Radio Network. But Bill Mooney, you'll hear from him later this evening as he receives the inaugural Bill Mooney Award for displaying courage in the face of tremendous adversity. We'll get to a break. When we come back, we're going to hear from NBC broadcaster Tom Hammond and Donna Brothers, who will present Tom with his award later this evening as well. This is exclusive coverage of the National Turf Writers and Broadcasters Awards on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Cal Density. Veterinarians can prove it. Horsemen can see it.
Kale Density announces a revolutionary gastrointestinal guard and aid for all classes and all ages of horses. A natural registered animal feed product, it comes as a single dose disposable syringe or a handy top dress squeeze pouch. Field trials on Kale Density Digestive Aid have returned 100% favorable results as observed by their trainers and owners, and the cost is half of what horsemen are accustomed to paying. Kale Density Digestive Aid will be available in mid-November, or you can order online at kaledensity.com.
Since 2006, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund has provided critical financial assistance to some 60 riders who have sustained catastrophic on-track injuries. The lives of these former athletes who have given so much to the sport of horse racing have been changed forever. I'm Mike Penna, president of the Horse Racing Radio Network and proud supporter of the PDJF, and I ask you to join me in supporting this outstanding organization right now by texting the word jockey to 50555. You'll be credited with a $10 donation that can literally change the lives of those disabled riders who need it so much. It's quick, it's easy, and it's only $10. Who would think a simple $5 Exacta box would mean so much to so many? So let's all help make a huge difference in the lives of those riders who have given us so many great memories. Text the word jockey to 50555 today and visit pdjf.org to learn more. Message and data rates may apply. Terms, mgive.org/chi.
It's time for the Breeders' Cup World Championships with top horses, great races, and lucrative wagering opportunities. Looking to make a score at Keeneland on racing's biggest days? PopeJude.com's popular analysis sheets are packed with insightful handicapping, private clocker updates, and inside information only the pontiff is privy to. Arm yourself for an educated and inspired assault on the mutual windows at PopeJude.com and make it a Breeders' Cup to remember.
The Breeders' Cup runs here.
Bayern, toast of New York, California Chrome. Bayern, toast of New York. Bayern has won it. Bayern got there by a head under Martin Garcia over toast of New York. It's untappable in front. Untappable the leader. Don't tell Sophia flying on the outside. Untappable gonna get there. Untappable has won it. Judy the Beauty sticks her neck out, goes for the wire. On the outside, Better Lucky's catching. Better Lucky, Judy the Beauty. Judy the Beauty, one and a head and eight thrillers. Main sequence finishing best of all, late run from Twilight Eclipse. But it is main sequence to score. Main sequence is one and a head.
The Breeders' Cup, October 30th and 31st. Exclusively here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Cal Density. Go to horseracingradio.net for more information and to listen live.
This is Bob Baffert, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Back to Lexington, Kentucky, the Marriott Griffin Gate, which is host to this year's National Turf Writers and Broadcasters Awards Dinner, the 56th annual awards. Mike Penna and Jude Feld, and boy, what a spectacular setting it is. We just heard from Bill Mooney, who has been so courageous in his battle with cancer, and now get to visit with one of the greatest broadcasters who has ever lived, and that is Tom Hammond of NBC. And maybe I'm pouring it on a little bit thick, but I'll tell you, we just did a little sound check here with the microphones, and I said, this is cool. I never get to do a sound check with Tom Hammond.
I sort of winced when you said the greatest broadcaster. I don't know about that. But I'm happy to be here and happy to be honored to get the Jim McKay Award, which, as you know, Jim McKay, arguably the greatest sports broadcaster of all time. So anytime your name is linked with his, it's an honor.
And being a native of Lexington, to be here and honored in your hometown tonight has to be special.
Always special. I always say that to be honored by the home folks is the best of all, to get that respect. And one of the things that I enjoy most is I will be somewhere in the middle of the world and some stranger will come up to me and say, I am from Kentucky, and you make us proud. That's about the best it gets.
That's fantastic. Yes.
Especially awesome. For somebody from Lexington, Kentucky. Yeah, it certainly goes a long way. Tom, when you look back on your career and you think about graduating from the University of Kentucky, could you ever imagine that it would take you to the heights that it has and you would end up where you are?
Not in the least, Mike, because I was pretty shy all through high school and into college. I never dreamt I would be a member of the media. I majored in animal science, and I thought I was going to the thoroughbred business. I worked at the racetrack in the summers and got my degree. And when I got my degree, I couldn't get a very good job. So out of semi-desperation, I went to graduate school. And while I was there, I got a part-time job reading race results on the radio because I couldn't find anybody else. So for $35 a week, I started reading the race results on the radio before the information age, when the breeders would have to listen to the radio to get those results or wait to the paper the next day. So I just kept volunteering for things at the radio station, moved on to local TV for 10 years, and then at the first Breeders' Cup in 1984, NBC hired me to be a member of the team. They were a little nervous. They'd never covered horse racing, and they saw all these races lasting 2 minutes, and they were on the air for 4 hours. So they assembled a large team. But at the end of that day, Michael Weissman came up to me and said, would you be interested in doing other things for NBC Sports, starting with NFL football? So I've been there ever since, 31 years.
Wow, that's a fantastic run. But it's nice that they actually picked a horse guy to cover horse racing. That's so rare.
And, of course, you're going to be presented for the award tonight by your good friend and colleague, Donna Barton Brothers, who is with us as well. And, Donna, for you, this has to be a tremendous honor to be able to present your good friend, Tom.
Yeah, he's not only a good friend and a colleague, he's been a mentor. There's been so many times. You know, my first network television show was the Breeders' Cup in 2000. So never having done any sort of network shows, I'm on for 5 hours, and we cover 8 races. And so it was sort of baptism by fire at first. But Tom Hammond and Mike Battaglia were my two go-to people, and anytime I'd have a question. And Tom's been a huge help to me.
Try to teach you the good things, Mike.
You do try to teach some bad things too, Tom Hammond.
If we're being honest here.
Off-air bad things.
What would you say is probably the most significant lesson that you've learned in working with Tom Hammond?
Don't let your question be longer than the potential answer.
Great advice.
There were times I would come to him and say, I want to ask this question. And I would give him the whole question, but it told a story with it. And he would go, that question is way too long. It's going to be longer than the answer. So that would probably be the best early advice he gave me. And then I'd say from there, what I've learned from Tom is that, you know, my goal was always to have a great show. And when you try to have a great show, you're striving for perfection. And what I've learned from Tom is to try to tell great stories. And if you tell great stories and we all work together seamlessly to do that and we listen to each other, we're going to have a great show.
Yeah, how important is listening with broadcasting?
Jude, it's amazing how many broadcasters don't listen. I think it's the most important thing. How many times do you see an interviewer ask a question and then obviously thinking of the next question they're going to ask, and ignore something really interesting that the interviewee said? It happens all the time.
Yeah.
And as sort of the traffic cop of the broadcast where I am, I try to listen to everything that happens so that I can reference it. I could pay attention and, you know, advance the story, so to speak. So listening to me is the most important thing and often is not done.
You know, we've often said on the radio side of things that the most important aspect of doing race coverage is to make people feel as if they're sitting there next to you, because there are no graphics. They can't see it. And I'm curious, Tom, when you are on air and you're hosting a broadcast, what's the most important thing in your perspective on the television side?
Pay attention to know what's going on, to know what the stories are, and to be able to tell those stories. And if someone else tells a story, for me to compliment by adding on to it. It works in football and racing, everything you do. And, of course, comes first listening, and second of all, paying attention and managing to advance the story. So, you know, and being conversational is the other thing. I try to be conversational as if we were all sitting around a table talking. Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that I want to say that Tom does really well, and I think a lot of broadcasters have learned from him, is that he lays out really well. Because like you said, in radio broadcasting, you're having to be the eyes and ears for your listeners. But in television, our listeners are getting to see what's happening. And so, like, after American Pharoah won the Triple Crown when he won the Belmont Stakes, Tom laid out for a good, I don't know, 20 seconds, maybe 30 seconds, and then finally said he did it, and then let the crowd noise and Victor Espinoza's celebration in the aftermath tell the story instead of trying to trump that story with a story of his own.
Yeah, you know, there's nothing I could say that could add to that moment. I could only detract from it. The pictures told, and the natural sound told the story. So I could only detract from the story. So I tried to be quiet, know when to lay out. I'm famous for doing that in a lot of sports. I'm famous for the hand to my partner that no one else can see it. But about a moment that we ought to lay out, I'm famous for doing this to them. And some of them don't quite like it. But and for the people listening on the radio, I'm holding my hand up in front of his face. So
you can only imagine. but that's a thing that I've read. Vin Scully is a big fan of, and sometimes I've become a little bit of a critic of broadcasters, right, as I'm watching them, and sometimes they do have a tendency to, like, you know, jump right in there when something great happens, and I really, having grown up in LA, right, and having listened to Scully so long, you do realize that sometimes silence is the best thing.
Absolutely. And Jude, you know, so many young broadcasters, there are 200 choices now on television, so I don't begrudge them trying to call attention to themselves. But they want to put their stamp on that moment, and all they're doing is detracting from that great moment by putting up some comment. So I think sometimes you're right. Silence is the best.
Tom, you've had so many memorable moments, the Olympics, the NFL, college football, whatever it might be. Where does American Pharoah's Triple Crown rank for you?
It's right up there, Mike. I haven't quantified it exactly where it stands in terms of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, but certainly it's right there. If not at the top, near the top. It was such a scene as they turned for home, and Donna on horseback on the other side couldn't really see all this happening or hear it happening, maybe. I don't know, she heard some of it. But as they turned for home, when it became obvious that American Pharoah was going to win the Triple Crown, the people just went crazy. And there were only 90,000 there, and I've been in stadiums that have held 120,000, even more than that. But the noise was absolutely deafening. People then started standing on tables and on chairs and throwing drinks in the air, and everybody holding their cell phones up to take video of that moment. And the roar continued past the finish line all the way till the horse was pulling up. And then I thought Victor Espinosa did a brilliant thing. Instead of coming right back into the winner's circle, he took American Pharoah the length of the grandstand for everybody to have a good look at him, and then brought him back to the winner's circle. So it was certainly one of the great moments I've ever been a part of.
Donna, how about for you, being on horseback when he crosses the finish line? What was that moment like?
Well, it was surreal. There was a family of five people on the outside fence there at Belmont Park where I was with my horse, and they were rooting really loudly during the race. I had two earpieces in because I knew the crowd noise would be a formidable opponent for trying to listen to Tom throw to me or to anything else. But even through my two earpieces, I could hear the lady shouting to me, "Did he win? Did he win?" And so I turned to her and said, "Yes, he won." And as soon as I said that, she and her whole family, there were like three kids, like I would say 7, 10, and 12, and her husband, break out in cheering and crying. And so for a brief second, I felt that emotion, and I was like, whoa, stop that. We can't have that emotion coming right now. So I had to kind of reel it back in again. And then the crowd noise that Tom was talking about was so loud that he threw to me twice, and I never even heard him. And I couldn't figure out why until I watched the replay of the show, and I realized that what happened was the crowd noise was coming through Tom's microphone. And so it was drowning out his voice. And so I didn't hear the throw to me until our producer piped in and said, "Donna, go." And I could hear him because he was in the truck. But it was just a surreal moment.
We talked about the race a little bit today, and Joel Rosario talking about getting past and then enjoying watching American Pharoah win the Triple Crown. And we were talking about the fact that that's got to be like one of the few times a jockey, maybe the only time a jockey would really enjoy getting beat. You know, I mean, he wanted to win the race, but once he figured out that wasn't happening, yeah, he was just enjoying
the moment.
Yeah, which was really cool.
Yeah, I think that all the jockeys wanted to win that race because they wanted to be the one to win the Triple Crown. And if they could stop Victor Espinosa from doing it, they had a shot to be the one to do it next. But at the same time, once they realized that they weren't going to beat him, I think they all took special pride in being a part of the race, a part of the moment.
And it's not just the 37-year wait that I think makes it so special. It's the charisma and the personality of the horse himself. You know, he's such a people horse, and it's just easy to fall in love with him for sure.
Tom Hammond finally had his picture taken with him at Monmouth Park when he came for the Haskell.
Yeah, I have yet to do that.
Yeah. You got to get there,
you're
Mike.
You're running out of time.
Yeah, you are running out of time.
I know. I'm going to have to wait.
Are you planning to go to the farm when he's...
I'm going to have to wait until he gets to Coolmore.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tom Hammond, Donna Brothers from NBC Sports. Tom, of course, the recipient of the Jim McKay Award for Broadcasting Excellence here at the National Turf Writers Dinner this evening, and really looking forward to that one coming up later here tonight. Tom, in terms of other sports that you've been involved with, we mentioned the Olympics, we mentioned so many of the football games in the NFL. What are some of those other moments in those sports that will always be memorable for you?
Well, Chris Collinsworth and I did the Orange Bowl for the national championship with Nebraska and Miami, and that was quite a scene, and quite with Miami leading the whole way. And we said, well, you better not celebrate yet, because those big Nebraska offensive linemen pound on you for a while, and in the fourth quarter it might be a different story. And that's exactly what happened. That was a great moment. When Michael Johnson became the first man in Olympic history to win both the 400 meters and the 200 meters in the same Olympic Games, it was in Atlanta. And as he ran in the 200, he had golden shoes, if you remember that moment, flashing in the flash bulbs of the cameras following him around the stadium. And it was such an exciting moment. Not only did he win, of course, but he set the world record in the process. And I began calling the race sitting down in my spot. And at the end of the race, without even realizing it, I had stood to my feet and, you know, was enjoying that moment as well. One that Donna knows well was Kathy Freeman, the Aboriginal Australian, winning before 120,000 at Sydney Olympic Stadium after being chosen to light the Olympic flame in the opening ceremonies. And the pressure on her was so immense, and yet she came through with it and then collapsed after the race with the weight of the world taken off her shoulders. In the NBA playoffs, when Reggie Miller scored, what, 6 points in just a few seconds? You remember that, when he hit a three?
Sure.
Stole the inbounds pass, took one dribble back behind the line and hit another three. That was a great moment at Madison Square Garden. You know, I can just go on and on. I'm sure I'm forgetting
Usain
some other ones.
Bolt.
Usain Bolt, of course.
Yeah.
And,
oh,
thank
yeah,
you very much. See, this is what Donna does. She keeps me on. Usain Bolt, when he first jumped into the world's consciousness in Beijing in 2008, and when he won the 100 there, he did it in such commanding fashion. He was just clowning around at the end, and he smashed the world record. Didn't set a new world record. He just smashed it to pieces. And we went back and looked at the tape, and his right shoelace was untied, and it was flopping around as he was doing this amazing run. And he is just an amazing athlete. 6'5". You've never been seen a 6'5" man able to start that quickly. Usually they're just getting started by the time the 100 meters is over. And he's become such a joy to watch. He's an athlete, I think, that's probably, Americans wouldn't realize this, but probably the most popular athlete in the world. Mobbed wherever he goes, but he's a genuine man. I'll give you an example. At the World Championships in Beijing this summer, he had won the 200 meters, which was his second gold medal. And as he was taking his victory lap, a Chinese cameraman riding a Segway accidentally hit the inner rail and bounced into Usain Bolt, knocked him over backwards. He turned a backward somersault, scraped his leg, and everything else. When Bolt got up, the first thing he did was go over to the Chinese cameraman to make sure he was okay. And then the next day, before he ran in the relays, he stopped and the Chinese man came over to him and gave him something to put on his wrist as a Chinese token of apology. And Usain went ahead and wore that when he won, anchoring the winning relay for the Jamaican team. So when they're getting ready to run a race and there's a medal ceremony going on, most of the other guys that are getting ready to run are taking care of business, doing things, not paying any attention. Usain Bolt always stops, stands, not at attention, but at least upright and paying attention to the medal ceremony out of respect. So he's a good guy.
Wow. Wow. We heard Donna mention earlier the emotions that started to creep in after American Pharoah won the Triple Crown. Have there been moments throughout your career where you've had to corral those emotions and kind of suppress them because you knew you were coming right back?
Yeah, there have been a few. At the Vancouver Olympic Games, Joanne Rochette, the French-Canadian Olympic skater, took the ice 2 days after her mother had unexpectedly passed away. She couldn't decide whether to skate or not, finally decided to skate. And as she skated, the tears were just cascading down her face. And it was just such an emotional moment. As Scott Hamilton said at the time, it makes each person think of loved ones they've lost. And Chris Collinsworth and Al Michaels came over just to be spectators in our booth that night, and I looked over at them and they were bawling like babies.
Well, I might be easy, but I'm wanting to cry from you just telling the story.
You know, I could spend all night talking with Tom and hearing these stories. But, Tom, I know that you have other things to do this evening. We're going to let you and Donna go enjoy it. And, again, congratulations on the Jim McKay Award tonight. Very special.
Thanks, Mike.
And congratulations on an outstanding career.
Thank you very much.
Mike, right. Great to be on with you. As always, you do a great job.
Donna, thanks so much. All right, we're going to go ahead and get to a commercial break. We will come back with more. You're listening to exclusive coverage of the National Turf Writers and Broadcasters Awards on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Cal Density. Veterinarians can prove it. Horsemen can see it.
This is HRRN, your exclusive home for the Breeders' Cup World Championships.
Cal Density announces a revolutionary gastrointestinal guard and aid for all classes and all ages of horses. A natural registered animal feed product, it comes as a single dose disposable syringe or a handy top dress squeeze pouch. Field trials on Cal Density Digestive Aid have returned 100% favorable results as observed by their trainers and owners, and the cost is half of what horsemen are accustomed to paying. Cal Density Digestive Aid will be available in mid-November, or you can order online at caldensity.com.
Since 2006, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund has provided critical financial assistance to some 60 riders who have sustained catastrophic on-track injuries. The lives of these former athletes who have given so much to the sport of horse racing have been changed forever. I'm Mike Penna, president of the Horse Racing Radio Network and proud supporter of the PDJF, and I ask you to join me in supporting this outstanding organization right now by texting the word jockey to 50555. You'll be credited with a $10 donation that can literally change the lives of those disabled riders who need it so much. It's quick, it's easy, and it's only $10. Who would think a simple $5 Exacta box would mean so much to so many? So let's all help make a huge difference in the lives of those riders who have given us so many great memories. Text the word jockey to 50555 today and visit pdjf.org to learn more. Message and data rates may apply. Terms, mgive.org/chi.
It's time for the Breeders' Cup World Championships with top horses, great races, and lucrative wagering opportunities. Looking to make a score at Keeneland on racing's biggest days? PopeJude.com's popular analysis sheets are packed with insightful handicapping, private clocker updates, and inside information only the pontiff is privy to. Arm yourself for an educated and inspired assault on the mutual windows at PopeJude.com and make it a Breeders' Cup to remember.
HRRN's newest show is Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. Every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, Mike Penna and Christina McManigal will bring you exclusive interviews with the best jockeys in the business. Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, on Sirius 220 and XM 206. Go to horseracingradio.net for more information or to listen live.
Hi, this is Chris McCarron, and you're listening to the best horse racing show on the radio on Horse Racing Radio Network.
Coverage of the 56th annual awards dinner here at the National Turf Writers and Broadcasters Organization. We are live from Marriott Griffin Gate in Lexington, Kentucky, and approaching that moment when we will welcome Turf Writer President Tom Padula to the stage. He will kind of get the festivities going right around 8 o'clock Eastern time, so just about 12 minutes or so from right now. And Jude, that is when we will present the honors to Team American Pharoah, Bob Baffert, Zayats, Victor Espinoza. Also, as you heard just a few moments ago, Tom Hammond, you see Bill Mooney, that award of courage, the inaugural one named in his honor, going to be spectacular. And then, of course, Tim Layden from Sports Illustrated and Kathy Shank of the Keeneland Library, all among the honorees here tonight.
Yeah, it's a great night, and everybody seems to be having a wonderful time. The booze is flowing, and the conversation is brisk. And Turf Riders Association, Turf Riders and Broadcasters, sometimes you would think that might be a little dull, but these are people that love our sport, they love the game, and certainly like to talk horses. So.
Yeah, you know, this is great. Everybody's enjoying their dinner now, and we can see Bob Baffert, that white hair he has on, the blue sport coat and the red tie with the white shirt, and so reminiscent of what representative of what Bob Baffert is all about. He always looks sharp, and he's always working the room. Very personable.
Yeah, he looks like he's running for office.
Yeah, he does. That's a great analogy. He really does.
But Bob's a great guy, and always has a good quip. He's a quote factory, as we like to say. So looking forward to hearing him speak, if he does. I don't know who's accepting the award or who's going to talk, but I think they'd be making a big mistake if they didn't let Baffert carry that ball.
I have a feeling that Ahmed Zayat may grab the microphone first. He is no stranger to taking a few bows and to going ahead and going on a bit of a filibuster, let's say.
Being a publicity hound is kind of
he
an
likes
earmark.
To talk. And hey, look, you know what? You own the first Triple Crown winner in 37 years. You can talk as much as you want, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, the Triple Crown owners are they want to have one thing in common, eccentricity.
Yeah. Victor Espinosa is here as well. He's looking good. He's got the gray sport coat on, a bit of a light blue shirt, and I know that he has been tirelessly signing autographs and taking pictures with everybody. And, you know, over the past couple of months since American Pharoah won that Triple Crown, I have never once, and I've been in the jocks room when it's happened, I've been walking around the racetrack when it's happened, I've never once seen Victor turn down anybody for an autograph, a picture, not one time, and he has been inundated with people coming up to him constantly.
Yeah, well, he's a very, very nice man. He, in the truest sense of the word, I mean, he's a guy that is philanthropic. He's very kind. I think he has an appreciation of where he came from and his humble beginnings and where he's risen to. And he never fails to give back, whether it's just an autograph or a picture or a large donation to the City of Hope where they take care of people with cancer. I mean, he's just that kind of a guy. And he's always got a smile on his face. And I think that comes from an appreciation of growing up without a lot and now being at the top of his profession.
Well, just a couple of moments ago, we had a chance to catch up with NBC broadcaster Tom Hammond, who has a resume as long as your arm when it comes to broadcasting. I think I maybe, as I said, poured it on a little thick when I said one of the greatest broadcasters that ever lived. But that, Jude, that might not be pushing it too far when you talk about Tom Hammond.
Yeah, you know, he was a little surprised that you said that, but that's the way Tom is. He's a wonderful man, and I think your assessment was accurate. If he's, you know, he's certainly among the greatest broadcasters of all time. He's a household word, of course, in Lexington, and there's people all over the world that know who he is and what he does. So, but you'll never get that from Tom. I mean, he's never failed to say hello to me, ask me how I am. He's just that kind of a guy. He never big leagues anybody. He's as wonderful as you think he might be when you watch him on television.
How great was it to have him walk through some of his fondest memories of broadcasting different events over the years?
Oh, it was off the hook. I mean, the stuff we've been able to do in the last 2 weeks, from going to Spendthrift Farm and talking to Richard Mandela and B. Wayne Hughes and then these interviews tonight and people that have stopped by on our lead-in shows to the Breeders' Cup. I mean, all of those things, they're just so wonderful. And if you're a big fan of racing like you and I are, we're like kids in a candy store. But we try to bring that to our listeners and hope everybody gets to enjoy the people involved. I mean, racing is about horses, but it's also the great stories. And certainly a guy like Tom that has covered so much of racing, but other sports as well, he adds a lot to our business. And this is an award that he richly deserves.
Mike Penna, Jude Feld with you from the Marriott Griffin Gate here in Lexington, Kentucky. Of course, the Breeders' Cup World Championships coming up on Friday and Saturday. They will be held at Keeneland for the very first time. And as you heard us reference a couple of times with our guests in this first half of the program, this is the first time that the Turf Writers Awards Dinner has been held here in Lexington as well. And it's a special night. So many of the top racing publicity people are here, your Turf Writers, your other broadcasters. We saw Steve Bick, our colleague, brethren on Sirius XM. He was here. We got a chance to see Kurt Becker and Larry Colmus, who were the two announcers that will be bringing you the coverage of the Breeders' Cup and all those calls. Of course, Larry doing it for NBC. Kurt will be working with Keeneland and with us on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So it's really a who's who of people in the industry on this side of the fence.
Yeah, no question about it. And John Asher from Churchill Downs, he's kind of become Mr. Kentucky Derby.
Yep. Jill Byrne.
And, there's so many people here, and there's people from other facets of the industry, like Kip Elser, for instance, who's a consigner in the thoroughbred industry. But, he's here to honor the honorees, and it's just a great night, and everybody seems to be having a good time. Lots of laughs and lots of good conversation and beautiful room on top of it.
Yeah, so spectacular. And, of course, just over to our right at the table enjoying their dinner right now, table number 14, is Jim Krigall and the folks from Cal Density, which, of course, are the title sponsor of this program here this evening, and that's the reason we're able to provide this coverage for you. They are also the sponsor of our coverage of every Breeders' Cup race Friday and Saturday, which comes up from 3 to 6 Eastern on Friday, noon to 6, 6 hours straight on Saturday, all presented by Cal Density, and you can go to caldensity.com to learn more about their outstanding product. And it's interesting because you mentioned the name John Asher from Churchill Downs, who, as you said, has become Mr. Kentucky Derby. He looked at me and he said, "Are you ready for 6 straight hours of coverage?" And I said, "You know what? I'm trying to get there, but we'll handle it."
Yeah, well, it's it goes so fast. When you're doing it, it goes so fast. And, Breeders' Cup is just like Christmas for me. I love the Breeders' Cup, and I'm looking forward to some great racing.
Coming up in the second half of the program at 8 o'clock Eastern, we will segue into the awards portion of the evening. That means that you don't have to listen to Jude and I anymore. We will kind of take a back seat, and we will turn it over to the folks here at the National Turf Writers and Broadcasters Awards as we honor Team American Pharoah. We honor Tom Hammond from NBC Sports. Tim Layden of Sports Illustrated going to receive an award, as is Kathy Shank of the Keeneland Library. And then, as you heard earlier in this first hour, distinguished turf rider Bill Mooney going to receive that award for courage. And how courageous was he in that interview a short time ago?
Yeah, a fantastic interview with Bill. And, you'll want to listen to that. I want to say give a little shout out to Kathy Shank, who's a lady that has helped me a lot in my turf riding and my exploration of history in our sport. She works at the Keeneland Library every day that it's open, and she does such a great job. And if you ever have any questions about racing or would like to look into the history of our sport, she's somebody that you can go and talk to at the Keeneland Library, and she will help you. She is a wonderful, wonderful lady.
After we went off air and went to the commercial break following our interview with Bill Mooney, he told us that she is absolutely over the moon to be able to receive that award here this evening. And really looking forward to her acceptance speech. All of the folks from Keeneland are here to support her, and should be just a tremendous time when she accepts the Joe Palmer Award for long and meritorious service to racing coming up in just a short time. All right, we'll get you set for that second half of the program. Again, the award ceremony set to begin 8 o'clock Eastern time, so we will step away for a short break. We'll come back and take you to it. This is exclusive coverage of the National Turf Writers and Broadcasters Awards on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Cal Density. Veterinarians can prove it. Horsemen can see it.
Cal Density announces a revolutionary gastrointestinal guard and aid for all classes and all ages of horses. A natural registered animal feed product, it comes as a single dose disposable syringe or a handy top dress squeeze pouch. Field trials on Cal Density Digestive Aid have returned 100% favorable results as observed by their trainers and owners, and the cost is half of what horsemen are accustomed to paying. Cal Density Digestive Aid will be available in mid-November, or you can order online at caldensity.com.
Since 2006, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund has provided critical financial assistance to some 60 riders who have sustained catastrophic on-track injuries. The lives of these former athletes who have given so much to the sport of horse racing have been changed forever. I'm Mike Penna, president of the Horse Racing Radio Network and proud supporter of the PDJF, and I ask you to join me in supporting this outstanding organization right now by texting the word jockey to 50555. You'll be credited with a $10 donation that can literally change the lives of those disabled riders who need it so much. It's quick, it's easy, and it's only $10. Who would think a simple $5 Exacta box would mean so much to so many? So let's all help make a huge difference in the lives of those riders who have given us so many great memories. Text the word jockey to 50555 today and visit pdjf.org to learn more. Message and data rates may apply. Terms mgive.org/chi.
It's time for the Breeders' Cup World Championships with top horses, great races, and lucrative wagering opportunities. Looking to make a score at Keeneland on racing's biggest days? PopeJude.com's popular analysis sheets are packed with insightful handicapping, private clocker updates, and inside information only the pontiff is privy to. Arm yourself for an educated and inspired assault on the mutual windows at PopeJude.com and make it a Breeders' Cup to remember.
There are millions of reasons to get involved in the fastest growing promotion in horse racing and the third richest thoroughbred event in the United States, the Daily Racing Form NTRA National Handicapping Championship. Whether it's online or on track, start playing today for $2.5 million in prize money and an Eclipse Award as Horse Player of the Year. Join the DRF NHC Tour today and start planning your trip to NHC in Las Vegas. Go to nhctour.com for details.
Celebrating 10 years of Eclipse award-winning coverage.
And it is a true privilege to be joined by legendary golfer and Hall of Famer Gary Player.
They say Frankel is the best horse. The British say that. They talk rubbish. Frankel is the best grass horse, maybe ever. But Secretariat would have kicked his butt on dirt. So let's be reasonable. Say he was the best grass horse. Don't say he's the best, period. It's very deceiving and very incorrect.
Thank you for making HRRN your home for a decade of memories.
Hi, I'm Richard Migliori, and I love listening to Horse Racing Radio Network. Good night, Barbados.
Tim is enjoying it.
Awards, and they have just kicked things off as our good friend Mike Kane has come to the podium to welcome Tim Layden and introduce him for his award coming up. It is the Walter Haight Award for a career in turf riding excellence. Let's listen in.
And it does the job in seven letters. Yes, elegant. Tim's been telling stories, some of them happy, some of them sad, of course, for as long as the gap of Triple Crown winners from Affirmed to American Pharoah. It's a number that has come up a lot in horse racing stories this season. You know the number. There's a 3 and a 7 there, 37. From the Schenectady Gazette in upstate New York, where we were colleagues for about 7 years, through the Albany Times Union, Newsday, and for more than two decades at Sports Illustrated, Tim has been a standout. Back then in the 70s in grimy Schenectady, New York, we knew that Tim had uncommon talent, bigger than our market was used to, where he wrote about all kinds of sports, including horse racing at Saratoga. Fortunately, he was hired by the Times Union, fortunately for him, not so great for us at the Gazette, where he went to work for a sports editor at the time, a kind of mad character named Al Vieira, who had a huge impact on his development. Tim was challenged by Vieira and provided opportunities that were not available to him at the Gazette, which had a much more local approach. Tim covered a young local boxer, a guy named Mike Tyson, who went on to international fame and infamy. He wrote about a former NBA player learning his way as a coach for the Albany Patroons of the Continental Basketball Association. That guy's done pretty well for himself, too. You may have heard of him. His name's Phil Jackson. And every summer when the racing returned to Saratoga, Tim covered the scene, too, and he covered it well. Better than the rest of us, to be sure. The young reporter who didn't know much about racing when he was handed the Saratoga beat in 1978 figured it out pretty quickly. His story on the Alamuse scandal, I don't know how many of you know of Alamuse, which was a grass horse that was DQ'd incorrectly by the stewards in 1986, earned Tim an Eclipse Award. And it also was a ticket out of Albany. Many of us call it Smallbany. And on to New York with Newsday and then Sports Illustrated. Back in our days in Schenectady, I remember Tim telling me, and I just confirmed it a couple minutes ago, he told me his life's ambition was to work for Sports Illustrated. He was probably about 27 at the time. Now, I don't know how many of you know people who say, this is something that I want to do and actually pull it off, but Tim Layden is one of those people. Our paths would cross from time to time after that in the Olympics, a college playoff game, Belmont, Saratoga. We started seeing each other more often when racing became one of his beats. He succeeded the legendary Bill Knack, not an easy task, and yes, he excelled at that. Nearly 40 years ago, someone at the Gazette, probably the sports editor Jack Hugerich, sent the summer intern, a kid named Tim Layden, to cover the 1977 Alabama at Saratoga. The next year, Hugerich hired this new college graduate and sent him off to cover Affirmed and Ali Dar at the Spa. He's been putting words together to tell sports stories ever since. Tonight, we honor his work, wonderful, beautiful, elegant, covering horse racing from those A horses in 1978 to another A horse in 2015. Please join me in saluting Tim Layden, winner of the Walter Haight Award.
Thanks very much, Mike. You get the sense Mike and I go back a little ways. Mike's one of those people that we all have in our lives where I know things about him and he knows things about me that neither one of us would want anybody else to know. So we kind of have that check on each other and it works pretty well. I want to say congratulations to the other honorees tonight, Tom Hammond, Kathy Schenck, Team American Pharoah, of course, and especially Bill Mooney. I'm humbled to be in your company tonight. I'm also humbled to join the other names on the list of the Walter Haight Award. One of those names is Red Smith, who goes way back. The older folks in the room would remember Red Smith as the great columnist for many New York newspapers. When I covered that 78 Travers, I went into the Saratoga press box early in the week to sit down and start working, and the people at NYRA had seated me next to Red Smith, which is like some guy on the backstretch who's training one claiming horse, getting stalls next to Bob Baffert at Santa Anita. I mean, I just sat there and thought, how am I supposed to open my portable typewriter and actually write words sitting next to Red Smith? I gave it a shot. And there's many people in this room on that list, and I'm, again, honored to be on the list with you. Some other people I want to thank that on that same timeline that Mike pointed out. A guy named Butch Walker was my editor at one time in Schenectady, and one day in 77 he decided he didn't want to go to Saratoga that day and work, so he gave me the little pin that NYRA gives you to get at the free parking and get into the press box. So I went to Saratoga, and that opened the door to this crazy world that you people all work in, and it was the first time I'd ever been there. I had to ask Joe Hirsch to show me how to read the program. I didn't know that Joe Hirsch wasn't the guy that you ask how to read the program. But, you know, he was sitting right there, and nobody seemed to be bothering him. So I kind of said, what does this, you know, the parentheses? And he explained it. He was just a wonderful man and helped me with that. My second job was at the Times Union, and I thank the Times Union of the 1980s for having way too intense an interest in horse racing for what we were. Sending 3 and 4 people a day up to Saratoga, but you know, it just freed us up to do whatever we wanted, to go to the backstretch, to meet people, to shake hands, to ask people what their story was. And every day, Tim Wilkin, Keith Martyr, Matt Graves, and I kicked everybody's butt, and we had a great time doing it. And it got me a job at Newsday. And once I got to Newsday, I covered football, basketball, baseball, all the basic team sports in America. But Paul Moran, the late Paul Moran, bless his soul, was so kind to me because every once in a while I wanted a break. I wanted to get back to something that was a little more wholesome than trying to get Daryl Strawberry to talk to me in the Mets locker room. So I'd go out to Belmont or Aqueduct or I'd go to a Breeders' Cup or a Belmont. And Paul was a tremendously talented writer, and he was so generous with his time and let me just take whatever sidebar I wanted. Maybe it was something he wanted to write that day. Paul always said, Tim, go ahead. It was great. And he was so kind to me, and I thank him for that. In 2001, Bill Knack left Sports Illustrated. I had been there 7 years. You don't want to step into Bill Knack's shoes. He is, was, and always will be the greatest turf writer in history. But the job was open, and as you can imagine, there wasn't a line around the block to fill it. So I took the job, and you know, before Bill, there was Billy Reed. there was Bill Leggett, there was Whitney Tower, and I've been honored to write Racing for Sports Illustrated, and I'm thankful that SI has continued to its commitment to covering racing on a at least semi-regular basis. I'm sure they've been tempted to drop it, as many papers have, and I thank SI for sending me around and tolerating whatever it is I want to write when I get out here. Lastly, my family, my wife Janet, my daughter Krista, my son Kevin. There are three very good reasons why none of them are here tonight, and I'm glad they have those reasons. But without them, I wouldn't be here. Lastly, I want to thank the National Turf Writers and Broadcasters. I'm not really a turf writer. I'm a sports writer who spends part of the year writing about horse racing. Jay Privman's a turf writer. Dave Grenning. Jenny Reese is a turf writer. And Jenny, I'm not sure who we are right now, but we're going to miss you. Vaya con Dios in your next life, you know, whatever it might be, you know. But I'm very thankful to all of you turf writers for welcoming me into your world, being generous with your time, and letting me play in your sandbox part of the year every year. Last thing, I'm wary of writing awards. I think our words are best consumed, read, enjoyed, not necessarily judged. You know, it's what Frank Zappa said about music criticism, which is it's like tap dancing about architecture. But a writing award bestowed upon someone by writers is special and different. Writers understand what it's like to look at a blank screen on deadline. They also understand what it's like to wait for a callback that is not coming. They understand what it's like to chase the truth. But writers also know the power of words and what it's like to fill that blank screen with one truthful, perfect sentence after another, then to hit send, go home, and come back and do it again the next day. So for all of you who chase those same words, those same perfect sentences, thank you very much from the bottom of my heart.
We'll ask Bill Mooney to make his way up. He is our next presenter. Bill will be presenting the Joe Palmer Award, and it goes to Kathy Schenck.
Okay. The essence of all good turf writing, be it done by broadcasters or turf scribes or someone who simply has a love for the sport, is largely grounded in research. When the charter was written for the Keeneland Association in the mid-1930s, a research library open to any and all members of the public was not among the original plans. But the charter did say that it was the association's ambition for Keeneland to become, quote, an everlasting credit to the sport of racing, not only in Kentucky, but throughout America. This ambition has gained realization and has come to include a library that is the finest research facility involving turfdom on these shores. Kathy Schenck's tenure at Keeneland now spans nearly four decades. She holds the title of head librarian and epitomizes the purposes for which Keeneland was founded. Service to the sport, service to the thoroughbred industry, service to the public, service to all. Kathy has an alert, inquisitive mind, an intuitive knowledge of where to locate the necessary information that elevates ordinary writing to the realm of excellence. And Kathy never hesitates to share that knowledge with anyone, be it the president of Keeneland or a multiple Eclipse Award winner, or a writer new to the sport of racing, or a sixth grader doing a research project. Kathy devotes the same courtesy, kindness, and assistance to all. The Joe Palmer Award is annually bestowed by the National Turf Writers and Broadcasters Association for meritorious service to racing. Prior recipients include John Gaines, the founder of the Breeders' Cup, James E. Bassett III, the former president of Keeneland, the former president of the Breeders' Cup, and Keeneland's chairman emeritus, and also such figures as Jim McKay, Paul Mellon, Joe Hirsch, Lafitte Pincai Jr., and others. And now we have another name to include in that grade one group. I wish to present to you, I proudly present to you, the recipient of this year's Joe Palmer Award for Meritorious Service to Racing, Kathy Schenck.
Thank you, Bill. That's a hard act to follow. But I'm extremely honored to be here tonight, and I am grateful to be the recipient of the Joe Palmer Award. Mostly, I want to thank all of the turf riders and all the broadcasters. You are the people who tell the stories of the horses and the trainers and the owners and the jockeys. And you tell it to the world so that other people can learn about the industry and become infected and passionate about horse racing as much as we are. And it's been my pleasure through the years to help many of you with your projects and your research. I want to say I learned years ago that I did not have to have the answers to your questions. I simply needed to know where to find the answer to your question. I also want to thank Keeneland for providing and supporting a library which is dedicated to preserving the history of the thoroughbred industry. I would like to pay tribute to my predecessors, Amelia Buckley and Darce Warren. They laid the foundation for the library and the many indexes and books and everything that we collect in the library. And it has been an honor for me to carry on this service to the industry and to anybody that wants to come to the library, because our library is open to the public. So you don't have to be in the horse industry to walk through our doors. As you can tell, I love working at Keeneland. It is a dream job, and I enjoy helping all of our patrons find the information that they seek. Thank you again for this high honor.
We'll ask Ted Bassett to make his way to the podium. He'll be our next presenter. Mr. Bassett will be presenting the inaugural Bill Mooney Award. Ted Bassett.
Good evening. It's a great pleasure and privilege for Bill Mooney and I to share this part of the program with the other distinguished honorees. Kathy, thank you for being the shadow ghostwriter to me for many years. Tom Hammond, who I grew up with his mother, and we just feel privileged to be part of this program here. I want to also commend the National Turf Riders for considering the special award of courage. Courage above oneself. And I think it sets a wonderful example for future turf riders who may be overcoming their own obstacles or challenges. I'd like also to commend to you Alicia Winters Hughes' wonderful, memorable treatise of Bill Mooney, going back through his days at Michigan State, back to the long, many days working as a reporter, and then a wonderful columnist, two-time Eclipse Award winner, author, and probably one of the great grade one aficionados of thoroughbred racing. He, and experiencing a very difficult time of his life, even in the days of darkness, he always found a ray of sunshine. He was an inspiration to many of us for defying and overcoming difficulties. So it's about defining what it is. And I'd like for you to bear with me for a few expressions of what courage is. What is courage? Courage is coming from one failure to another without losing heart. Courage is having the fortitude to overcome what you know is threatening and intimidating. Courage is grace under pressure. If you have no fear, you have no courage. A courageous man is one who thinks aloud to himself and who can face life's destiny with dignity, grace, and hope. Please welcome the initial Bill Mooney Award to our recipient tonight, who has shown remarkable courage, perseverance, with dignity, hope for life. Bill Mooney.
I've been thinking about courage somewhat myself, what it means, and I can't define it. But I can tell you what I think one of the most remarkable examples of courage I ever witnessed. Most of the people in this room knew Joe Hirsch, and I remember the last time he ever came down to Lexington to cover the Bluegrass Stakes. You remember how ill Joe was. He had Parkinson's. He was all stooped over. And when he went out to dinner to the coach house, one of his favorite haunts, he and I, and it was just the two of us. And he was so bent over at that point that his eyes and nose were barely above the tabletop. And we got into a conversation about the writers for the Daily Racing Form, and he told me that he thought the Racing Form writers at that time were the best that the publication had ever had. And he mentioned Mr. Hovday, and he mentioned Mr. Priffman. And I said to him, well, how about you, Joe? You're the dean of turf writers. And he lifted his head barely above the tabletop, and he smiled, and he slowly shook his head. And he said to me, no, I'm just a shadow of what I once was. I keep writing to stay alive. I will be honest with you, being diagnosed with terminal cancer, which is what I've got, it's in my kidneys, it's in my lungs, it's in my brain, and other places too, it's not an easy thing to deal with. But at the same time, I tell you this with all sincerity, overall it's been a good thing, because it has made me a better person, much more cognizant to the trials and tribulations that other people deal with. And with that comes some regrets. There have been other members of the turf writing fraternity. I can name a few. Paul Moran, two-time Eclipse Award winner, longtime writer for Newsday. Lucy Acton, longtime editor of the Mid-Atlantic Thoroughbred. Victor Zast, who covered every Breeders' Cup until the year he died. Those people had their own fights with terminal cancer, and I so dearly regret that during their fights, I did not reach out a more compassionate hand to them. But I vow to you, for all my remaining days, I will never again hesitate to reach out that compassionate hand to whoever needs it. In closing, I would like to say, having this award and having it named after me is an honor beyond comprehension. And I'm going to borrow very heavily from a sports figure of decades ago who loved to play the horses and who was a pretty good baseball player, too. His name was Babe Ruth. And in one of his last public appearances, he said the same words that I have in my heart, is that I am well aware that during all this, there have been so many lovely things said about me. And I'm glad to have the opportunity to thank everybody. Thank you.
Next, we have the Jim McKay Award, and to make the presentation, please welcome to the podium from NBC, Donna Barton Brothers.
First of all, congratulations, Bill. Thank you for your courage. And Tim and Kathy, congratulations to you. I can't believe you've been at the Keeneland Library since you were obviously 10. So I've been asked to introduce a man who needs no introduction. So I'll have to share a little bit about what makes him so special to me and to all the people who know him well. Tom's a native of Lexington, Kentucky. He graduated from the University of Kentucky with a major in animal science, specializing in equine genetics. He loved the horses, and he hoped for a career in some capacity with them. But as it would happen, television loved Tom. And so it's that career that he's become so well known for. And it's fortunate for us who've had the pleasure of working with him. An important lesson that Tom has been gracious enough to share with some of us, maybe just those of us who have asked for advice or maybe people like me who he thought needed some advice, is this. If you think you're going to witness and thus become a part of a historic moment, come up with something to say that is equal to that moment. So I wanted to share with this group of great writers and broadcasters a story that illustrates what a great writer and storyteller Tom is first and foremost. In the 1996 Olympics held in Atlanta, Kathy Freeman was second in the women's 400 meters, and it was a heartbreaking defeat for her. 4 years later, the Olympics were held in her native country, Australia, and Kathy Freeman, an Australian Aborigine, was so beloved by the people of her country that she was asked to light the Olympic flame, one of the greatest honors that can be bestowed upon an athlete. An Australian woman had won the first women's 400 meters in 1960, but Australia had not won it in the 40 years since. The Australian Aboriginal people had not only never won gold at the Olympics, they had never even been represented. Kathy Freeman's country's hopes were high that she would capture the gold, and Tom told this story in the setup for the race. As they entered the starting blocks for the 400-meter race, Tom captured the significance of what a win for Freeman would mean with these three short sentences. Kathy Freeman has waited 4 years for this chance. Australia has waited for 40 years. And the Aboriginal people of Australia have waited forever. The gun fired. And the race started, and the race itself was quite dramatic. At the top of the stretch, it appeared that Kathy Freeman had no chance to win. But somehow, she willed herself to victory. And just two steps beyond the finish line, she collapsed on the track, not only from the exertion of winning the race, but also from the relief of the pressure and expectations that she had been under. This is what Tom Hammond does so well, and why he's being honored tonight with the Jim McKay Award in Excellence. He's a master storyteller with a passion for history, and he's able to capture the significance of an event that is happening today in the context of the rich history that has preceded it. Tom's been a mentor to so many of us at NBC. Mike Battaglia's famous line holds true for many. The four words that have kept us in the business for a long time are, "Back to you, Tom." That said, the nine words that have kept me in the business since I started working with Tom 15 years ago are, "No, Tom, I cannot have another drink with you." Tom brings passion to all he does, whether it's riding a post parade for the Traverse Stakes or capturing the overall emotions in the aftermath of a Triple Crown or sipping a Grey Goose gimlet. He's a good man to all who know him a little bit. To those who have been fortunate enough to work with him, he is a mentor and an exemplar in broadcasting at its best. To the relatively few who have been blessed enough to call him friend, there's simply none better. It's my honor and pleasure to introduce Tom Hammond tonight, and maybe tonight, Tom, I'll have one more.
Thank you, Donna. I haven't died yet. Some of that was actually true, but not all of it. Thank you, Donna, and thanks to all here tonight. What an honor to be included with Tim and with Kathy and with Bill and with the American Faro crew. This has been a great year to broadcast Thoroughbred Racing for obvious reasons. In 1978, I was standing right next to the late Chick Anderson, as he called, affirmed in Allendar, and I was starting to think I'd never see another Triple Crown. And what a great moment that was. You were in the middle of it. Maybe you couldn't fully appreciate it because you were emotional at the time, but the noise was deafening. I've been in stadiums that hold 120,000, 130,000, never louder than that. And it started when they turned for home, and it was obvious that he was going to win the race. And it continued all the way past the finish line till he pulled up. And on the way back, and Victor did a brilliant thing, took him the length of the grandstand to let everybody have a good look at him. And after all these 100 years I've been broadcasting, that ranks right up there with the best moments of all time, all the Olympics and everything else. So it's not only a wonderful year because of American Faro's exploits, but I think the Breeders' Cup coming to Keeneland is going to be special too. No community has ever embraced the Breeders' Cup like Lexington has. I think it's going to be pretty special, and the race itself, the Classic, is going to be pretty special as well. What an honor not only to be included with the other recipients, but to join Jack Whitaker and Charles C. Candy as winners of the Jim McKay Award. You know, every broadcast that we do is a team effort. Some of my teammates are here tonight, scattered around, and I'd like to thank them for making my life pleasant. And for my wife, Sheila, who has put up with my nonsense for all these years, thank you too, Sheila. I visited Keeneland as a teenager on one Saturday afternoon, and I said, this is what I want to do. And so all through high school, through college, animal science major, Donna, you're right, and working at the backstretch in the summers of college, that's what I wanted to do. I couldn't find a very good job when I graduated, and so I got a part-time job reading race results on the radio, $35 a week. And then just kept volunteering for everything else, went to local television, and then in 1984, NBC hired me to be on the first Breeders' Cup broadcast. And at the end of that day, as we signed off the air, two things happened. John Gaines came up and gave me a big bear hug because he knew he had a winning concept. And the other thing that happened was Michael Weissman, who was then the executive producer at NBC Sports, said, would you be interested in doing other things for NBC starting with NFL football? So 31 years later, I'm still working for NBC, and who would have ever guessed, certainly I wouldn't have, what a great ride it has been. 11 Olympics in Rio will be 12 next year, and all the other sports that I've covered, what a great charmed life I've led. And to receive an award named for Jim McKay, arguably the greatest sports broadcaster of all time, is special. We worked for different networks, so our paths didn't often cross, but there were two memorable occasions I remember. One was during Preakness Week when he invited me out to his farm to have dinner and regaled me with wild tales the whole time. And I was flattered when he remembered that before he was the host of Wide World of Sports, he covered the same sports that I did, football and basketball, of course, but also track and field, figure skating, Olympics, and, of course, thoroughbred racing. And the other time was at the Winter Olympics in Salt Lake City. And Sarah Hughes, the 16-year-old, had just won the gold medal in figure skating. When I came back to my hotel room, Jim McKay was gracious enough to call and give me some compliments, and to me that meant all the world. So those were the two times that I will always remember of interacting with Jim McKay, and now I have another, winning an award in his name. Just one more thing I want to say, and some of you know it, I've held a grudge against this organization for about 40 years. When I was working here in Lexington in local television, we did a lot of horse-related stories. I was also the announcer at the Keeneland Sales. And so at the urging of Joe Hirsch, who seems to have come up a lot with all of us tonight, at the urging of Joe Hirsch, I applied for membership in this organization and was told effectively that television people are journalistic lightweights, smiling faces that read off a teleprompter written by somebody else, and you have no business joining this august group of scribes of the sport of kings. So I'm happy to say that the philosophy seems to have changed, thanks to Tom and others, and I think you'll be a better organization for it, for being inclusive, and I thank you so much for this honor tonight. It's been one of the highlights of my career, and I appreciate it immensely. Thanks.
The Mr. Fitz Award goes to someone who typifies the spirit of racing, and to present that award, we'll ask Tom Padula to come to the podium, and it goes to Team American Pharoah.
As I covered one failed Triple Crown bid after another, I began to wonder what it would take to complete the historic sweep. Would it ever happen again? Now we have the answer. It takes a horse born to greatness, American Pharoah. It takes a jockey such as Victor Espinoza, who rode him flawlessly through the spring classics. As American Pharoah and Espinoza stormed home in the Belmont Stakes, we were reminded what makes the Triple Crown so special, as horse and man worked as one in the quest of racing immortality. The Triple Crown requires a trainer such as Bob Baffert. Bob and his exceptional staff were able to anticipate Pharoah's every need. They had him primed for every challenge and had carrots at the ready when every obstacle was cleared. Bob, you produced so many wonderful horses during your Hall of Fame career. This was your masterpiece. Last and certainly not least, winning the Triple Crown requires an owner such as Ahmed Zayat and a racing manager such as Justin. The Zayats did not interfere with the experts they hired. When the first Triple Crown in 37 years occurred, they knew how to embrace the moment. True sportsmen are rare in this age. The Zayats are true sportsmen. Instead of taking the money and running after the Belmont, they showcased racing's long-awaited superstar at Monmouth Park in New Jersey. at Saratoga Racecourse in upstate New York. And now, as the first Triple Crown champion to compete in the Breeders' Cup Classic, a race that looms as one for the ages. It is my honor to present to you Ahmed Zayat, representing American Pharoah and Team, to accept the Mr. Fitz Award for typifying the spirit in racing.
What an honor and a privilege. We are truly humbled on behalf of Team Pharoah. I really haven't prepared anything. I'm not good being scripted. I'm a spontaneous guy, as you all know. But but it's a rare occasion that I actually I'm in front of people who happen to be an integral part of showing the public what is racing is all about. You are the writers, the journalists, the broadcasters. You don't just go and cover this horse's enter here or running here. There is a lot of subplots and stories and effort and teamwork and sportsmanship and triumph and sadness and injury and happiness and on and on and on. I stand here in front of you, guilty of not even knowing, honestly and at all, who is being honored. And I'm part of this sport. I've only been in this game since really 2006. But it's an incredible, important part, a very important part of this incredible sport. And to go and to understand what Keelan have done and how important the history and researching and the historian, the carriage. I've always heard about Joe Hirsch, but I've never met him, never even knew about him. About Tom, about every single honoree that today was honored by you. For me, I need to be educated, somebody who's part of this sport. It is imperative that we create a second generation, people that you would bring in and inspire and mentor and help elevate and get out this message. And I have not even talked to my own son or my team. Today, I want to tell you, I want to give this organization a scholarship, $100,000, to be divided between, let's say, five people that you would pick to do either study journalism, be interns, go have masters, or enhance the quality of the coverage. It is something that we need to, and I would be proud. I know this is about American Pharoah, but this, you are our face. You are the one who bring his hard work, how hard every single people do. As an owner, we tried our best. We were gifted and blessed and honored and just lucky to have a special horse that has inspired us, inspired America, give us home. And we tried as much as possible to open our heart, our barn, and to show everybody what a horse can change everybody's life. I thank you from my bottom of my heart. I'm humbled, privileged, and hey.
Is Bodhi can be part of that scholarship? The The first thoroughbred I ever bought, his name was 30 Sloughs, and I remember bringing him to Keeneland. It's the first time I ever got the Derby bug. I brought him to Lexington Stakes. I remember bringing him in here. I was completely out of my element. And that they didn't. I remember coming here. There wasn't an announcer. It was just so different for me. And but I remember a friend of mine, I got out of here. I couldn't wait. I came from the quarter horse world where we never get interviewed, and I was just dying to talk to somebody. And so so finally, I was here a couple days, and a friend of mine, a trainer, I call him up. He says, so what's going on? Are you doing a lot of interviews? Are you doing things? I says, no, not really. I said, I only had one guy, a really old guy, and I talked to him for about 45 minutes, and he never wrote anything down. I go, what's his name? He says, his name is Joe Hirsch. And so, dude, he is the man. He is like the greatest. And, you know, and it turned out the article, he was always, Joe Hirsch was just always so positive, and he loved horse racing, and always made a point to, he had, you know, go to dinner with him once a year, and he was just really a great man. And when I think of turf riders, I think of Joe Hirsch and all the, because I know you guys have to, you know, put up with the elements. You know, when I first got in the business, I loved it. Then it got to a point where, you know, it gets a little bit, you know, tough, and I got a little bit too big for my britches once in a while, and you guys set me down pretty quick. So, but it's one of those things where, you know, this year, I think this horse has really brought out, you know, you guys have written some great stories, and, you know, it takes a great horse that brought us, I think it brought us everybody together in racing, and so and I couldn't have done it without my man Jimmy Barnes here, who actually, Jimmy spent so much time with his horse, and he's become very good with the press. When I'm not around, Jimmy can really turn it on, I think, much better than I can. So, and Victor did a phenomenal job. You know, he's and then Justin, who's always been a Bob Baffert fan from day one, and he's the one that tells Dad, send that one to Bob. So, and every year they would tell me, Bob, you got to come down to the farm. We have all the trainers there. And I said, you know what? Just have Justin pick my horses for me. And Justin is really the best horse picker of all. So, and I want to thank everybody. And the main man here, here's a guy that, he is just has so much passion and loves the sport. And he was fantastic during this whole, since day one. He just wanted to know how is he doing. I'm so nervous. We're looking good. And also I want to thank Jill Baffert for putting up with all my trainers, I'll tell you what, we're moody, okay? We're moody, we're competitive, very moody, and whenever she hears, like, Jimmy's phone call early in the morning, she's first one, what's going on? What happened? Who is it? But it's a tough business, but I love it, and I loved hearing all the stories. And Tom Hammond, what's more exciting, figure skating or horse racing? But it's been, you know, I'm glad that the Belmont, but I'm glad that, you know, the Triple Crown, I mean, that last quarter, the noise, unfortunately, my wife Jill was crying. She was emotional. She didn't hear the noise. But it was really spectacular, and everybody was so wonderful. But I want to thank everybody again.
We have one additional special presentation. If Alicia Wins Hughes would come up to help conclude our evening with one additional special presentation.
This one is such a big deal. I need my girls with me to help out. American Pharoahs is not the only one, is not the only force in racing that is going to be having their career swan song in the Breeders' Cup this year. As many of you know, the lovely Miss Jenny Reese has taken a buyout and will be leaving her post with the Courier Journal after this year's Breeders' Cup. You know, we all get paid to write for a living, but Jenny's impact on this sport is beyond any words that we can conjure.
Well, she's been a pioneer for female turf riders, beating down glass ceilings. Because she did her job, she made it possible for riders like us to have jobs, for our presence and our words to be respected and heard. But she is so much more. There's no one in this sport who has not been inspired by her knowledge and work ethic. And every single one of us is beyond fortunate to call her not only a mentor, but a friend.
In honor of Jenny, the National Turf Writers and Broadcasters are creating a $2,000 scholarship in her name for a student at her alma mater, Indiana University. This scholarship will be for a commitment of 2 years, though we hope to extend it as our resources allow.
So raise your glass of Budweiser. Wait, the Budweiser! Budweiser with ice!
And bow down to the Queen.
I was not expecting this at all. My chicks here, I mean, they're so awesome. You know, all week I was thinking, counting down the days and saying, I know I should be, because I'm reinventing myself. I'm not retiring. I'm not going away. I'm just leaving the daily newspaper business. And I was glad with a lot of stuff going on this week. But this, like I said, I don't know whether to kiss them or cuss them, you know. I am blown away in the scholarship at IU. But, you know, you guys are so great, and I have decided for the people at this table here that I really want to be more of your world than I want to be the newsroom world. I want to use my communication skills to be help with communications and advocacy work for horsemen. And horsemen takes many forms, and promote racing, and maybe have some pushback when I think there's some things that are not fair, and that I think, because horsemen, they train horses, and that's what they worry about, and sometimes there's not the, they don't worry, they just dig in and deal with their horses, and I don't know where I'm going, but I'm going to get paid for a year, and and I hope to do a lot of different things, a lot of different projects. I want to be very involved in fan education, hopefully with, you know, Keeneland and some things, and just really, I mean, this is my life. You know, some of you know my husband's a trainer, and, you know, I'm going to be at the racetrack more than ever. He won't raise my salary as a hot walker. I still won't get any pay for that. But this really floored me. I mean, I just, you know, like my makeup's all ruined. So what can I say? Love you all. Love the people, like the people at this table. Like, what great stories. I got to tell you a couple stories about Bob Baffert. Since I didn't expect to be up here. I got it. But so anyways, I think it was 93. So we had the first time, then, you know, it was you won the Breeders' Cup Sprint. And then the next year you were at the Derby with your horse that maybe had been in the Lexington here at Keeneland, right, Bob? So anyways, he was up by, Barn 1. Now, what were you doing up by Barn 1 there? Why weren't you in, like, the Stakes Barn or something? I don't know. But anyways, he was going on about the little, like, dime store tractors that they had going around. Remember that? And you didn't know that was Butch Lear, the track superintendent, that was up there in the press box. I mean, in the clacker stand with him. And I could just see the steam coming out of it. But, you know, I mean, Bob really cares about his horses, and he really cared about, you know, the track and stuff. It's just so funny how, you know, you just think all these years later, you know, who knew? Who knew? And here's the thing I really want to say, really. And I actually am glad that I was shocked like this. I covered 11 Triple Crowns that didn't happen. And I learned, Bob schooled me on this, one time I wrote about a horse failing. The horses didn't fail. They just didn't win. There's a big distinction. You know, a horse like Silver Charm, a horse like Real Quiet, a horse like, yeah, like Smarty Jones and Funny Side, they tried and it just didn't work out. But they put their heart on the line. And so to actually see a Triple Crown, I didn't know what it would be like. In the modern era, you know, when I started covering racing, there was no internet, there was no Twitter, there was no, well, gosh, you know, there was hardly laptop computers when I started covering racing. And to see, like I keep saying, the right horse and the right people with the horse won the Triple Crown and shared him with the public. And I will say this, my husband's barn, you know, small barn, was right across the road from, you know, where Baffert's always at Churchill Downs. And I could see the interaction with the public. And I could see Jimmy. You know, every day I would trot over there and, you know that, you know, the effort they put to make this horse public. And it was extraordinary. It was extraordinary. There's people that did not win the Triple Crown. Had they won the Triple Crown, it would have been completely different. It would have been, you couldn't get within a football field of that horse. But they really, really just unbelievably, you know, just knew, and maybe including possibly it cost him in the Travis, you know, with the 15,000 people cheering on the horse with the track announcer the day before. But, it, you know, people are going to remember this. And as Dale Roman says, when this horse is, you know, goes to stud and in the history books 50 years from now, they're not going to remember that this horse, American Pharoah, lost the Travers. They're going to remember that he won the Triple Crown, and it's a truly great horse. And when you have to rank him among them, he's right up there with Secretariat, you know, Affirmed. I put him ahead of Seattle Slough. You know? Okay. But he's not done yet. He's not done yet. Who knows what? No, maybe in the end. Maybe in the end we say that he's, you know, who knows? You know, it's different generations. And Bob said one time, you can't compare him to the other horses. He is what he is. He defines himself. And he's absolutely right about that. But just things seemed to fall in line where I decided this was the time for me to reinvent myself. And one was that I finally covered a Triple Crown winner. I know what it looks like. I know what it looks like with the right people having him. And so thank you all very much.
Close with a quick story. Back in the 70s, when the Dallas Cowboys were going to Super Bowls regularly, their star player was Dwayne Thomas, and he was being interviewed about what it was like to play in the ultimate game. And he said something to the effect of, if it's the ultimate game, how come they're going to have another one next year? I know you guys will have another one of these ceremonies next year in California, but I can't imagine a more deserving and distinguished group of honorees. So congratulations once again to all of you this evening. One last request, if we could get all the award winners to come up for a group photo. Thank you for coming out, and have a great rest of Breeders' Cup week here in Kentucky.
Okay, one quick housekeeping. I'm sure everybody's dying to know what's going on with the silent auction. We're closing them out now.
All right, and then we'll about wrap it up here from the National Turf Writers and Broadcasters Awards here at the Marriott Griffin Gate in Lexington. And Jude, what a night.
Yeah, it was fantastic, I got to say. Really outstripped expectations, and the expectations were relatively high, but it was a great, great program.
Fun way to end it with Jenny Reese coming to the podium unexpectedly, very emotional, and so many emotional moments with this evening here tonight. Don't forget, we're back tomorrow morning, 8 a.m. Eastern, with the Breeders' Cup Countdown live from Keeneland as we edge closer to the 32nd Breeders' Cup World Championships on the Horse Racing Radio Network. For our producers, Lee Delapina back in our Lexington studios, for Sean C. with us here on site, for Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. We'll talk to you next time, but for now, so long.